I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. At Lighthouse, we're celebrating 22 years in business and just entering our ninth year of doing open line programs. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2016 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. Plus, our new book, Cracking the Business Code, is available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Our topic today is a fresh perspective for doing business in China, an exporting opportunity. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting our program today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to raise the hiring bar and assist companies with a variety of services, including interpersonal coaching, executive onboarding for success, leadership training, operational productivity improvement, and exploring global options for expanding your business. In fact, we just opened an office late last year in Taiwan. So if you have an operation in Asia and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas of how to best interact with a U.S. company, please let me know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is a response to a number of calls we get from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So you'll want to write down two or three questions for either sending in during the program or for asking once we open up the line. I feel very privileged to have a special guest with us today. Casey, help me out here. Shao Morris. There we go. Casey is a very close friend. Casey is also in my Visage group, and just a wonderful human being. Casey is the founder and owner of Leverage China LLC. Was born and raised in a beautiful beach city of Dalian, Liaoning, province in China. From a young age, living on a major seaport, instilled in her was a love for international commerce, which is still her greatest passion. She came to the United States 18 years ago and completed her MBA at California State University shortly thereafter. And since founding Leverage China in 2008, Casey has used her decades of international business experience to help American companies navigate their expansions into China's emerging markets. Her tailored approach takes the needs and resources of each business into account, creating unique strategies that have helped a range of companies, from small to Fortune 50 companies. Casey excels in helping clients close the gaps to build strong, lasting relationships between companies, even across distant borders and varying cultures. Casey focuses her efforts on ensuring that her clients' market strategies are perfectly aligned, seamless, so they'll be successful and fast into market. Using a network of connections with local distributors and with the help of an effective team-based China, she is in unmatched position for facilitating the entry into China. I feel privileged to have Casey with us today and share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Also, registration for our next program will begin at the end of today's program. The topic will be staying out of the quicksand when it comes to employment law issues. And it'll be a panel discussion with some amazing panelists. Casey, I want to welcome you to Open Line. Thank you for being part of our program.
Thank you for the invitation. Good morning, everyone. And Dana, thank you for the wonderful introduction.
You're welcome.
As you mentioned, I was raised and grew up in China. I worked in China for 10 years before I came to the States. That gave me a lot of insights how Chinese people work or Chinese business work. In the past 19 years in the United States, I gained the insight of how American company work, how American company, what are the American company bottom line are. So that gave me a very unique experience to connect Chinese market and American market. What Leverage China is a boutique consulting service. Simply, we offer four things. We offer strategies, tactics, resources, and connections for our clients in every phase of their expansion to China. Before I get to the presentation, I want to share a story of my parents. I grew up in the 70s when I have a younger brother, so we have four people in our family. We lived in a one-bedroom apartment. We were sharing a toilet and a kitchen with a next-door neighbor for many years. And my family owned four appliances at that time, a sewing machine. I wish I can share a picture of the sewing machine my mom owned, a camera, which was considered to be a luxury good at that time. My dad owned a bicycle. That's about the things that our family owned. As you know, things have changed since then for the better. And today, my parents live in a gated high-rise apartment building with a gorgeous view, and they no longer share bathrooms with anyone. They have appliances that you can see in every American home. So there's a note. My parents just one of the millions middle-class families in China. There's no doubt, using my own experience and professional experience, the upper middle class exists in China. And there's no doubt, and China market is a consumer market, and it presents great export opportunities for American companies. So in next 45 minutes, I would like to cover market trends that matters to us, and what's happening online in China, and what exact opportunity it brings. In the end, I will cover two areas is critical for our American companies. One is the five potential challenges you should be prepared prior to entering the market. And the last but not least is seven best practices to increase success and reduce failure. Let me move the slide. So there are two myths about China economy. One is China's stock market. The second one is real estate bubble. There's talks on media. Let me debunk the myth today. In many countries, stock market performance is an indicator of the economy. However, it's never true for China. Boston Consulting recently conducted a survey. Only 7% of Chinese consumers responded that stock market trend will impact their decision to purchase more or less. In the same survey, about 8% of consumers responded real estate market trend will impact their decision to spend more or less. The question for everyone is, how many households in China are mortgage-free? The answer is about 75% households.
Wow.
So it, yes. So in the U.S., as I research, about 30%. So it further suggests that really it's a bubble if there are one, and it won't affect them that much as it did to American families. So in 4 years from now, Chinese consumption is projected to grow additional 2.3 trillion. To put it in perspective, it roughly equals a market 1.3 times of Germany or UK. My point is, when companies are looking to grow and reach overseas market, China should be one of the foreign markets to be considered. Let me move to the next. So let me get to the market trends that really matter to us. And we, as an American company, we are evaluating China, whether it's a good place to export, is a market provide opportunities, is not always a good approach to determine based on China's current GDP. In fact, their industries are booming, and their industries, while other industries are declining. So it's very important to take a deeper look at what your industry is doing in China. In addition, in China, in 4 years from now, there's 260 million people will reach 65 years old and older. In perspective, this is that's nearly a size of U.S. population. As a senior today, the market environment is there's just not enough services, care services, medical service, on quality medical treatment to cater this growing population. And keep in mind, these are generation, most of the parents have one child. They are not able, just one single child, not able to support and working, support to take care of their family, their aging parents, and working. And if that child, there is an ongoing issue, is when the child is married, this young couple will raise one child and take care of four parents, and assuming they live nearby, and there's a lot of services and products are needed to meet the demand by this group. And Chinese women, they're making more money. They have, actually, China has the highest percentage of women participating in the workplace. They are working, they make more money than ever, and they're making purchasing decisions for themselves and for the family. And China has a millennials generation, about 200 million. They're the spender. They're the bigger spender than their parents. They are most optimistic about the future, and they are they're different from the traditional Chinese consumers. We've seen continued growth in the demands that cater to product and services cater to China's millennials. And don't forget, even China has this one child per family policy, and China still have 60 million babies every year. And the number is increasing because the one child per family policy was revoked last year. There are going to be more than 60 million babies coming to this world. And when you have one or two babies, the parents spend a lot of money on those babies. And that's why, American baby formulas are doing well, strollers are doing well, any baby brand tend to do well in China. And along that, last year, China set forth a car seat policy that every car has to have a car seat for safety issue concern, and that drives the demand. This is just to give you an example. In the same time, in the next 4 to 6 years, 300 million people will move out of poverty. And today is about 60% of the Chinese are in poverty, and half of them will move out of it. That's the fuel China economy continuously. And today, 14% of urban households are considered upper middle class. But 6 years from now, half of Chinese more than 50% of urban households will be considered upper middle class. So the last but not least, I cannot talk about export opportunity without mentioning online. Is what happened in China in the past 6 years online is just unbelievable. So in the past 6 years, 700 million people jump on the internet in China. More than half of them are active online shoppers. Their online retail size is already succeeded that of in United States or in combined Europe market. And it's very encouraging that their online shopper penetration rate is still relatively low compared to that in the United States. So the online market, its online retail market, is going to continue to grow.
Casey, so, and do the companies that do the online, do they have to be based in China, or can they be anywhere in the world and do business on the internet?
That's a very good question. You can do both ways. The major players online retail is called Tmall, which is owned by Alibaba, and another, the second largest retail is JD.com. We think that both will work. If you want to have a better control, your business in China, you can set up your office, hire your people to open the online business. But mm-hmm. a lot of them are you can do offshore without stepping into China. That's an amazing thing about online. And you also can work with distributors, so online e-commerce resellers, without, you know, have them set up stores online, then we don't have to invest in opening our own operations. So it's a very flexible way to do business. May I continue?
Yes.
So with 700 million people online, online retail is keep growing. So what does it mean to our American companies? Does it mean to opportunity? Let me explain what I see. What it means that companies, foreign companies, who used to have a distribution issues, they couldn't find a way or partners to reach out to end users. They are able to do it right now online. That's also the reason global financial services are doing very well in China, because online they're able to use their online platform to educate local customers, to reach the local customers. And online also is a great tool for you to do market research, collecting market data used to be very, very difficult. And now because online, we can know who we are competing, what their price, and is it the size of a market, the size of the interest, if we is worthwhile for us to go in. And that also means, you know, Dana, going back to your question, can I do online business? Can I do e-commerce without investing big time in operations and insight? A lot of this doesn't suit a lot of companies. It is. It's very possible because online. And that also means that the barrier to enter the market is lower than ever. Hmm. And this is, yes, this is not able, I can give you more example. Let me give you an example. Amazon has a platform that connecting American companies without inventory in China or have a business in China. Amazon connect their listings on Amazon in the U.S. can ship individual orders to Chinese consumers. It's doing very well. Because the products coming from America, American brands are always highly regarded. Is it better? Is it safer? Is people willing to pay the extra money for it? After giving an example for Amazon's platform, I want to mention that this is online business opportunities not limited to consumer goods. In fact, 30% of online business is non-consumers. It could be business to businesses. And this market gonna continue to grow. Your slide online is different from my slide, so I'm gonna move to slide to the next one. Okay. And this is it means, you know, I mentioned about market research is using online is less competitive. We'll also use online for. I partnered with a digital marketing company. We helped American pharmaceutical company who's a counterfeit. People selling their drugs, cancer prevention drugs, illegally. We're able to identify them quickly within 2 or 3 months and then who they are, get to them account so we can, the company is able to stop those counterfeiters. It used to be very expensive to do. I mentioned of a market research. Also, that means, you know, companies who are doing business in China. I see in general, foreign companies tend to be slow in understanding what this online, the skill of a China online business. So I have a few good examples to share with you. We work with an industrial parts manufacturer in the U.S. It's a specialty part fastener. We're able to acquire certain keywords using local search engine. We're able to start conversation with the interest and convert them to customers. And with this simple method, their business is able to grow. And the cost is relatively low. We're talking about a few thousand dollars a month. They're continuing to grow. And the social media is a main selling tool. I read a story on USA Today. It's a real estate agent in Manhattan. He sold a multi-million-dollar apartment by posting pictures on WeChat. He posted to his friends, and his friends reposted to their extended network, and his cost of managing that social media is $30 a month.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah. So I want to give you a few more examples of how American companies, how online market help American companies. Costco. Costco launched Costco and Kirkland brand, a number of brands Costco carry, online. They didn't do, they didn't build up stores, physical stores in China. They are very smart about it because they can do, within less than a year, they are able to launch on Tmall Global. They are able to understand customers, understand what they want, the price range, and they did it in a very low cost, risk control way. And if you think if Costco build up a brick mortar store, guess how much that will cost, how long it will take. So Macy's, many, many American brands, or global brands, are using online to start doing business in China. And online is ideal for small and medium customers. Let me move on. So after sharing with everyone the opportunities, China truly presents opportunities for American companies. I also want to share China presents challenges as well. The statistic shows 46% of foreign companies exit China within 2 years. So how come the market is huge, business opportunities are plenty, how come the failure rate is so high? So I summarize in the four areas foreign companies tend to have challenges with. So number one is we all know that China is a different market, and different language, and laws are different, vary from the United States, and the business culture. Chinese are more relationship-based, and marketing, they are still a developing country. There are many differences, but the challenge we see is creating a business model, a strategic plan, and marketing messages are really address those differences. Without it, keeping in mind, no customers in the world will change for you, for us. We have to create them, create a product offer that they can resonate. And the number two, starting from scratch, in everywhere in the globe, we do business on Google. You have a strong presence on Google that may transferable to mostly to UK, to other markets, except to other market. But in China, when you start in China, especially online, give you example, is you have to use a local search engine. Google is not available there. So yeah, we have to be ready. And also you might be a new brand to a lot of people. You have to start with building the trust, educating about your technology, and go from there. The third one is you have to have your own your team for China, a task force for China with the people with a country-specific skills. If we are hoping, I'm just using my current team, they can pay a visit to China a couple times a year, and we will be set. That's really a wrong approach. Doing business in China is a long-term approach. It requires your ongoing communication efforts and tweaking your business models or your business development plans in order to win. And knowing that it's a long-term play, we have to set sufficient resources aside for China. That means people's resources, it could be financial resources. And And, you know, the last one but not the least is expectation. It takes time. I go three or four time a year to accompany my clients to meet their potential partners. And Chinese companies, they want to get to know you. They don't make a quick decision. So, you know, when we decide, I would like to launch this brand within 12 months, but they have to be, this has to be confirmed with their partners. So it is, we a lot of time executives I speak to, they're surprised at how long it takes. It really takes time. We have to have a patient.
Casey, I have a question. Probably about 5, 6, 7 years ago, I went to the Milken Economic Global Conference, and there was an individual that was on a panel that had close to 200 stores, let's say the equivalent to 7-Eleven in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And she had grown this from scratch in China and was doing very well. But she made it very clear to everybody in the audience. She said, don't ever forget, when you're dealing with in China, you're dealing with communists, and they could very easily close me down the next day I'm out of business. Is that still true today, where there's interference potentially by the government from a business that's succeeding, or is that yesteryear?
I think in general, government has a lot of, Chinese government has a lot of troubles, a lot of headaches to deal with. You know, the pollution is, you know, to keep economy grow. Their interest is to keep everybody happy. Everybody has a job, and their life standard not get hurt. But I don't know the specific. Yes, there's a little bit that too.
Okay.
If you have yes, it's not 100% gone, that concern, but it still exists. And keep in mind, China is a developing country. They're changing a lot more often. And I live in the States for almost 20 years. In the business world, it depends on your industry. They change a lot more frequently than everything in the United States.
Huh.
Because we are developed the country. We already set, we have enough experience to set the laws can cover almost every aspect of business. In China, they set up a law quickly because the industry emerged. And then a couple of years later, say, wait a minute, that's not complete. There's a new situation. They are doing, you know, another. They're set forth a new laws. So you always see that. A few years ago, if you want to get a license to open chemical factories, that's okay. You know, they want a job, they want your investment. And today, because of their fear of pollution, further polluting their air, it is very difficult to get any chemical factories open.
Hmm. Another question is, we know that bribery is not allowed on the surface, but at the same time, there are certain people that have to be taken care of, at least in the past. Is that still common in doing business?
It is common, but it is subtle. I mentioned it's a relationship. Base the business. If you know somebody before, or if you got to know executive or a government official through his friend, you can get a lot of things done quickly because there's a lot of gray areas. They can do this if they know you. You can get things done quickly. In the past 3 years, the new prime minister. Launched the anti-corruption campaign.
Hmm.
The officials you're dealing with, they're not, they're losing their lives, they're losing their jobs. There is very serious political campaign. However, we've seen the other side of it because the officials are so afraid to be accused of bribery, they don't prove anything. They're very slow approving new projects because they're afraid of association with the bribery.
Gotcha. So are people given gifts then, or is that not allowed anymore?
They do. For, you know, I went to, I had a meeting in Alibaba. I always suggest it can be gifting. Just share a few tips of gifting. If you're meeting the executives, you should bring a small gift, not expensive gift. Should be, I always suggest, you know, something from, say we're from Southern California, as a photo book for, you know, you're something from represent your factory, your brand, your where you come from. It's also a good idea. That's a respect.
Gotcha.
And okay. They're corporately, I don't think a government official is waiting to, you know, if a small thing might take it. I can do another webinar on gifting because, you know, it's early January when I was there, we didn't bring enough gifts. There's more high-ranking executives show up at our meeting. We brought four, but there are five officials. It's awkward. So I can talk a lot more, but gifting
okay.
Small, inexpensive, meaningful gifts, it's always appreciated.
Okay, we could do that at another time. Thank you. I appreciate addressing that topic. Let's go to the next slide, 7 best practices.
Yes, and, you know, if you have, for those companies, just one thing. If you're doing business with Chinese companies who are visiting here, I think it's small gifts, meaning you care, you respect them, and, you know, they know gifting is not an American thing, and they will appreciate them.
And Chinese-based clients came to the U.S., and this individual loves motorcycles. So I stopped by a Harley dealership and got some little thing from a Harley store, and he was just so excited and grateful and appreciative.
Yes, it is a good idea. They often, you know, it's a gesture. It's a thought that counts.
Right, thought. I like that. I like that. Let's go to the next slide. Perfect.
Yes. The 7 practices, the first one, we use it religiously, we call it 3C model. The 3C stands for customers, cost of doing business, and competition. That's 3 C's. To do good due diligence and able to answer the question whether you should do business, and the second question is able to answer a question, how are we going to do business in China? And the right answer is, who are your customers? Will you have enough demand for your product? Who exactly your customers? And simply say 1.3 billion population is your customer is not the right answer. You need to know who they are, the age group. I work with a brand. Their customers in the United States are younger, 30 to 40. In China, it's about 50 who use their product. So that give you idea how to reach them. And the cost of entering the market, there's two sides of it. Is the cost of doing business, you know, developing business, the cost of travel, and another side is the cost of compliance. That's in certain industries, that's most expensive cost in doing business. For example, vitamins, supplements. In the United States, it's not regulated by anyone. You don't have to get tested like a pharmaceutical product to launch to the market. But in China, there is pharmaceutical similar process. It takes 2 years generally, and it's quite expensive to get approved before you bring to the market. So the competition, we see, you know, the used to be, you know, I'm in a business for a while, you know, 25, 6 years. It used to be, if you say, well, American product, you might be the only one in the market that's good, really good for you. They didn't have much choices. And today, you see best products from all over the world are in China. So you need to know who you're competing with. There is a British brand or Brazilian brand, or could be a local business you have to compete with. So understanding that is critical. You can save your money and save your time for later on.
Do food company this is a question, I guess I don't know the answer to this. Do Chinese eat bread?
They do.
They do. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, so they do more steam. They do, you know, they have ovens now at home. They bake a lot. They use a pizza. They do home pizzas, getting popular. They have been popular. They do a lot of steam buns. Like, you know, have you been to dim sum stores, like
yes.
Cantonese Chinese stores? They do a lot of buns at home. They do eat bread.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes.
Do any U.S. bread companies do business in China at this point? Do you know?
Bread, you mentioned that including Pizza Hut type of bread?
Like Oral Wheat, Wonder Bread, something like that.
I haven't seen it, but that doesn't mean they don't. Yeah.
Okay, I'm just curious. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the second best practice is we have to knowing now. After, you know, I'm very honest to share it with you. China is a long-term play. So after knowing that, so you have to ask your question. It's a really good time for your organization. And do we have the top management commitment? Do we have enough funding to develop a market? And it just, you know, business always take longer to develop than we expected. Do we have enough funding to keep it going? Are we exposed to any risk? For example, when we sell in China, eventually we may manufacture in China. So I have a client to have the manufacturing in China. They have, you know, their own factory in Europe, but they hire 700 people. Are they any risk? Are you exposed to any risk to closing down that shop in Europe that hurts that 700 employees? And doing business in China, it doesn't always involve your sales business development teams that affects the whole supply chain. You may need to get regulatory compliance just for China, the special orders for China. They use different, you know, they have, for example, the products tend to be, in American family, we tend to get big items because we have a lot of space. In China, the space is their apartment tend to be small, their fridge tend to be small. Are you going to make different, smaller products for them? So that's a lot of to think about, have a company level, high level conversation. Are we ready to do this? And what I see is, any companies receive support from top management tend to have a very realistic, a very effective plan to begin with. The third, I mentioned about Costco. There's always a chance your business model for China is not the same as how you do business in the United States. Giving the example Costco. They did the best move, however, is it different? You want to be open-minded. More than 90% foreign business, they do business differently in China. My hero here is Amway. is that America is the, I can't stop talking about them, as they are the model system for American company to learn when you're doing business in overseas market. They adapted, the China law has changed four times. They are in China for 16 years, more or less. They changed their business models four or five times to suit the Chinese business, Chinese market. During the 16 years, the law has changed in direct sales. Direct sales is not always friendly in China. So they did it, but they're a very successful company. China, I believe, contributes 30% of revenue for the entire Amway.
Holy cow.
Yep. And the fourth one is understanding you have to develop market gradually. Costco use online, that's only the first step to understand the market, to understand what product worked, and then they make a second plan for further market development. They may build a store. I was told, they are evaluating to build physical stores in China. So it's not the one thing, is that you have to plan out in number of phases. Honestly, the second phase, you don't know until your first phase is in, based on the results and feedback from market, and you have enough information to develop the further plan. And localize. The good examples here is American fast food chains. They're super successful in China, KFC, Pizza Hut, Papa John's, McDonald's, because one of the major reasons they're successful because they are able to develop menus just for Chinese consumers. I was in Papa John's a few times. They have not only they create, they have this spaghetti dish. You not use a chicken or beef. They use the duck meat on top. That's a classic example of localization. If they move, Pizza Hut is a good example. Pizza Hut, you barely, go to the Pizza Hut, Dana. You will love it in China. They develop not a pick-up-and-go type of fast food pizza. It's a sit-down restaurant. It's an upper-scale sit-down restaurant. The menu's a lot of bit bigger. Their menu about 30 pages.
Wow.
A menu. And they not only have pizza, spaghetti, drinks, local drinks, food drinks. It's a place that young people, you can take a date to. That's their image. And what they localize their message as well. All this American food franchise, they localize their marketing message. They have high standards choosing the meat and the food sources is always safe. Safety, food safety is always a concern. So they address that as a main marketing message. They're very, very effective. Number six is choosing the right partners. Costco did a good job. They joined a partnership with Alibaba. Alibaba in the past 5 years has built very sophisticated infrastructure, delivery, distribution, fulfillment centers across China. So by joining the partnership with Alibaba, Costco didn't build anything. They tap into that resource, they tap into that facility, they just start to sell. So local partners is very important. For example, when you do business in China, you might need a very good digital marketing firm to build a website, to understand the market, to do research. And your team in the United States probably don't understand how local search engines work. So those are critical resources that you need. The last but not the least is understanding the competitions. And when you talk about opportunities, how big opportunities, you should always spend the same amount of time to talk about competitions and challenges. This is my that's the number one thing I would recommend. Only by addressing this ahead, beforehand, so you won't be surprised, you won't be blindsided when you get in. So that's covered my presentation today. Oh, I missed one slide, I think. All right. I have one slide. There's three takeaways I want you to go home with. The number one is don't lose sight of the scales of the China economy. And don't let stock market news guide your decision whether you should consider China or not. The second is look at e-commerce marketplace. It might be the best starting point for you, especially for small and medium enterprises. The third one is begin with due diligence. That's the best thing you can do for yourself. And I'm open for questions, Dana.
Great. That is phenomenal. Well, we're going to – Casey, that was just outstanding. In just a minute or so, we're going to conclude this part of the program. We're going to open up the line to ask Casey some questions, but I need to turn off the recording feature. I'll do that in just a second. You'll see on the screen the area for registering for our upcoming June 14th open line program, which is entitled Staying Out of the Quicksand When It Comes to Employment Law Issues. It will be a panel discussion. Casey, I want to thank you. That was just outstanding. If everyone can please stand by and just give me 10 seconds to turn the recording feature off, and then we'll be right back, and you can ask Casey questions directly. Just 1 second. For unmuting everybody, so we're not able to open up the line today. However, what I would like to do is encourage everyone to, if you have questions for Casey, please either email. You can see the email on the screen for Casey, or call directly. Casey's phone number is area code 310-920-4580. That's area code 310 in the United States. Erica, 310-920-4580. Casey, thank you again so much for this wonderful program and ideas that you presented. It was very, very thorough, and we look forward to having you on Open Line in the future, and we'll talk about the other topic we discussed earlier. So thank
sure,
you.
Sure. You're welcome. You're welcome. Dana, I mentioned that I would like – you're a great – host, by the way, I would like to offer a free report for your audience, the people in your network. It is Doing Business in China, avoiding the 10 most common pitfalls. If they email me with a subject line, the avoiding the 10 most common pitfalls, something along the line, I will send the report to them right away.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that very kind offer. That was very gracious. Well, thank you again, everybody, for attending Open Line. Look forward to having you back next month. And Casey, once again, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Everyone have a terrific Tuesday.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye,
Bye.
Casey.